And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletics Football GM Podcast.
Cut, five, ready, five, ready, cut.
And now, the Athletics Mike Sando and former NFL executive of the year, Randy Mueller.
Welcome, everybody, to the Football GM Podcast. Great to have you back. We had a fun show last week with Mickey Loomis, general manager of the Saints, on. Be sure to check that out. We got the GM back, the other GM back, the other Saints exec of the year, the GM back, Randy Mueller. Randy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Coming off of our conversation with Mickey, I sure have had a lot of comments from around the league on that one. I think we got Mickey going a little bit, which was a good thing.
Oh, that's really good. Fun stuff, great memories. You know, we have a ton of stuff fresh this week, as we always do. You know, I think people used to ask us, we've said before, what do you do in the off season? Well, the off season is more interesting than the season in a lot of ways. And we're gonna have a mix on the show today. We're gonna talk about a couple quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers is a very kind of an elephant in the room story here. We got Deshaun Watson with unprecedented really situation going on there, which will segue into some Texans talk and just how they're proceeding. We're going to talk about the Patriots, and we're going to talk about the AFC West, just sort of what they've done in free agency, where those teams are at. We have a good Ask the GM question, as usual. Stay tuned for that. But, Randy, let's dive in, and let's make it so people don't have to push that plus 30 seconds button. Whenever I listen to podcasts, I wear that thing out a lot of the time. So let's not let them do that. Let's dive right in with Aaron Rodgers, and we'll set the table here a little bit just for what's going on with Aaron Rodgers. He has a big contract, counts $37 million on the cap, which isn't the end of the world. But as people know, there's a lot of stuff going on. They drafted a quarterback last year. Aaron wasn't real happy about it. They haven't really exactly loaded up on receivers and things around him. So while they went 13-3, you know, his happiness, his lack of happiness sort of leaks out every once in a while. You know, he wasn't really a big fan of the decision that Matt LaFleur made in the last game and let us know. And so it's percolating. And a lot of people just assumed he'd restructure his deal.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's good.
There's mechanisms in contracts where teams can do that, but right. It's not that simple, Randy. What's the dynamics here? What makes this such a sensitive deal and not just an easy restructure?
Well, I think it started with his State of the Union after that last game, and I don't think anybody's got that out of their minds. And in fact, their starting center, who's of Pro Bowl status, walks out the door and signs with the Chargers, and all of a sudden, here we go again. You're losing all our help. Wait a second. I thought we were supposed to keep our good players and add to it. So there's a little bit there. Obviously, they've been up against it cap-wise, or at least that's been their reason to, and the best way to create cap room is to restructure your best player's contract, right? We've seen a bunch of teams around the league kick the can down the road. We've seen them turn base salary into signing bonus. We've seen them turn roster bonus into signing bonus, stretch it out. Well, that's what makes this interesting, Mike. It hasn't happened yet. And I'm not sure why it hasn't happened, whether it's more on Rodgers' side or the Packers' side. But as we know, he had a pretty good size roster bonus come due the other day. And if you were going to create cap room, the best way to do it would have been to turn that roster bonus into signing bonus and spread it out. Even if you didn't add any voidable years, you'd still got some money spread out a little bit, but they didn't take advantage of that window. There's some rumor out there that they're trying to work something out. I think it's a little bit push me, pull you in that so far the Packers haven't been willing to commit longer term dollars. We saw in Pittsburgh that the Steelers were willing to redo Ben's contract, but they also were willing to take on some cap hit down the line. That's the one thing we haven't seen the Packers do. So because they haven't, you know, spread out cap on years to come and pushed credit card spending out to the limit, there's a question that comes up all the time is what's going to happen with Rodgers? Is this the last year? You know, obviously you pointed out the Jordan Love stuff. There's just a lot of what ifs, and there's really no answer to it. But I don't think it's going to go away because he hasn't redone his deal. There's been no more, I guess, motivation from the Packers to push out money. And maybe Aaron Rodgers at the end of the day is just saying, screw it, I'm going to force your hand. I'm just going to sit where I'm at, play out this year, and see what happens after next year. Then you're really going to be caught. So there's motivation, for both sides in here to make a deal.
If I had to venture, that's what I bet he's doing. And the problem they have is they can't have Jordan Love on the bench for 3 or 4 years, or it's a totally blown pick.
Right.
If I'm Rodgers and I'm going to agree to redo a deal, I want real security. Hey, I want you to declare. If you want me to do a favor for you, when you won't draft a receiver for me, when you let my center go out the door,
right?
When you know you're not making moves you're drafting a quarterback in the first round. Now you're coming to me for a little bit of help.
Right.
It's a two-way street. So if I'm going to do help, I want you to give me a contract that says I'm the starter of the next 2 years.
Yeah. And do it publicly.
Do it publicly.
Yeah.
And that's totally reasonable to me if I'm Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
I just won the MVP.
Right.
What do you want from me?
Seriously, he's the MVP of the league. And we're not willing to kick the can a little bit on him?
And I mean, shoot, the Falcons just kicked the can on Matt Ryan.
37 years old, not anywhere near the status of Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, so it's not going away. And winning masks a lot of that. It's not a crisis all the time. But I think there's a real chance that this comes to a head next offseason. And especially if he doesn't have as good of a year. But right. What would happen if he were to be MVP level type next year? What would happen?
They can't run him off, I don't think.
No.
That's the main thing is he's going to be their quarterback. I've said from day one, for as long as he plays good or he wants to be their quarterback. So the pressure is, I think, as much on the Packers as ever. And it's a stare down. Let's face it. It is a stare down now. As more time goes on, it'll be a Dak Prescott deal where the pendulum swings even further into the player's court to decide what he wants to do with his future. I don't know. It's a tough spot. And again, you'd hate to say the first round pick from a year ago ends up being a little bit of a whiff or a waste. But maybe at some point in preseason, they prop up Jordan Love to where he plays really good and they find a home for him somewhere. Maybe somebody gives him a second round pick down the road. There's some cards that still have to be played. But right now, it sure seems like Aaron Rodgers has a flush and he's just waiting to lay him down on the table.
Absolutely. And you've said in the past, though, that, you know, you think drafting Jordan Love helped get an even better performance out of him, you know, just with the incentive of that. So maybe, you know, maybe it's not a big mess and maybe this is a great problem to have. Hey, we drafted a guy we like and it's making another guy play better. We actually do have two guys we like. And usually that's a lie when you say that. I did talk to a guy who does contracts in a front office about this week, and he kind of thought on it and said two things. He said, number one, while you can just convert a quarterback space to bonus, if the quarterback doesn't want to go along with it, it can get a little messy. Like you have to go through a process where you threaten some of his money and that type of stuff to do it. It's not just an automatic, even though it is an automatic if he's okay with it. But if he's not, if you're in a little bit of a delicate relationship, it's not easy to do. And then the other thing he said was, you know, maybe they're better off just waiting to next year too and just reevaluating where they're at. I mean, maybe any number of things could happen this year. Rodgers could have another broken collarbone and miss the final 12 games, and Jordan Love could do great, and they could win a playoff game. That might change how they feel about things. So if they have a quarterback who's playing great, that's a problem a lot of teams would like to have.
No question, and I think it's also a problem where they have to do right by Aaron Rodgers. You can say they want to hold off or they should hold off, but this is the quarterback of your franchise. This is the face of the whole city. I think the two are independent of each other, I'll be honest with you. The Jordan Love situation and Aaron Rodgers. I think if I'm operating that team as Brian Gutekunst, I'm probably going to lean to the side of taking care of Aaron Rodgers, whatever it takes. We'll make the other one be a secondary case If it works out where he doesn't play for 3 or 4 years, we'll make the best of it. But I don't have to trade him. I don't have to do anything. They have his rights for 5 years. So he may sit there for 3 years. And like you said, the purpose of drafting him partially, I think, was to get Aaron to play at a higher level. That's happened. So I agree with you. I think maybe playing it out is fine. But I also think that Aaron has to be invested. He's got to be happy. He's got to be, I think, he deserves to have his contract looked at no matter what. And I think that's the bottom line, is you risk alienating him in the process if you don't do right by him.
That's what I was going to say. Do you feel like after that season that that it's awkward if you don't redo his deal this offseason?
Is that awkward? I do. I think it's very awkward. And that's why I think we're talking about it. That's why we're in this, you know, gray area, so to speak, because the guy was MVP of the league. It's not like he just upped his game and played decent. He played better than anybody else in the league. So how can you not anoint him to be the guy for the next 2 or 3 years? And if you do stretch out some money that he doesn't end up playing to get, so what? What's the worst part of that? So you got $10 million at the end of it all that then ends up accelerating because his play did fall off and we decided to go a different direction. That's the cost of doing business as well. I think sometimes you can overthink it and your pride gets in the way when you're trying to find a way to interject Jordan Love in this whole conversation. Again, I think it's independent.
There's not a lot of precedent. You know, usually when we look at these situations, you can draw in your mind on 5 different things that have happened before, but it's unusual to have somebody in Rodgers' situation be there and then have a team trade up in the first round, to get a quarterback. So we said at the time that would be complicated, and here we are. It's worked well for them.
Right.
But if I'm Rodgers, I'm saying, why didn't we draft a receiver instead of that quarterback? You didn't even help us get over the top. And then in the last game of the year, our receivers can't get off press coverage. Or they're mugging them and holding them, and we can't do it, or whatever. Or we don't have the next Lindsley or whatever. So I agreed. For a team that's 13-3, an awkward situation.
I guess it's a good problem.
It is. Our next topic, Deshaun Watson, is you talk about not having a precedent for it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to analyze. There's very sensitive issues involved. It feels inappropriate to just discuss the football implications of what should happen with the trade, but it feels inappropriate to pass judgment on Watson himself. He has civil suits against him. Anybody could file one. But at the same time, it feels insensitive to dismiss the concerns of these women that could be totally legitimate. We don't know what we're dealing with here. Yet the clock ticks for the Texans. They have to make decisions. They have to plan for their roster. They've been extremely busy in doing that. If Randy, there's 2 types of GM jobs. There's the one you would like to have where you get to do whatever you want. And there's the one where you walk in and suddenly you're in a dispute between the team and your quarterback. And by the way, there's an unprecedented thing of these civil suits that are extremely sensitive. General manager of the team, what would you be doing?
No, I guess you're right. We do not know the facts, and I surely don't claim to know the legal ramifications of everything that's going on and how that's going to work out. And if I'm Nick Cesario, to that end, I've kind of just got to set it all aside. And that's not disparaging anybody on either side for any reason. I'd have to run the football team. So I know you started by saying it doesn't seem right just to talk about football, but that's all they can do is talk about football. I think they got to let the rest of it play out in the courts and in the legal system. It is what it is. I think the good news for Nick is that he's kind of been operating under that auspices for a while now. Since he got the job, the Deshaun Watson dilemma has been out there. So he's kind of had to have one eye on the future of if this guy decides not to play, we're going to do this. And now it seems to me like there's so much off the field smoke now that he's got to continue to operate along those lines. And I think he has. I think I read a couple of days ago, and it may be even higher now, 38 player transactions the last week or two. I mean, it's crazy the amount of time or the amount of effort and the amount of coming and going that this team has been through. Let's face it, they were bad last year. They needed this. So I think Nick has brought his Bill Belichick style of math coming from New England, and we've seen what they've done, and he's used this unprecedented pool of talent to upgrade as many spots as he can. I don't see a downside with that. You know, I see a way to supplement bad drafting. I see a way to get us better. I see a way to get the criteria for what our coaches want within their schemes. I see a way to fit in those players better than ever before. So I'm using this just like Bill is, in a perfect storm way. They had cap room. They're using it, so to speak. And we'll see. And I think the Deshaun thing is going to have to play out really independent of how Nick builds this team.
Yeah, they said they weren't going to entertain trade offers anyway. So people are asking, does this affect his trade? Well, there's no trade talks going on. So I think usually when you come in and you have a quarterback, a young talented quarterback, every move you make is seen through the lens of what are you doing to help Deshaun Watson or the quarterback? And especially when, you know, over the last couple of years, the moves they've made have been perceived to hurting him, right? Getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins. It's been all about the quarterback. And before these suits came up, it was all about the quarterback too, because he was trying to get out of the team. But now I think you're right that they have to set everything to the side. Tyrod Taylor, Christian Kirksey, Terrence Mitchell, Philip Lindsay, Justin Britt, Jordan Jenkins, Desmond King, Derek Rivers, Andre Roberts, Cam Jones. I take a breath. Mark Ingram, Thomas, McCray, Brooks, Moore, Taylor, another Thomas. They've signed multiple guys named Thomas.
Right.
there's five more guys on my list of guys that they've signed. And I think they obviously wanted to change the culture of the team. And when you come in, Randy, sometimes that's a 2 or 3 year process. You inherit big contracts. They might be good players, but it takes a while. I don't know that we've seen a reset like this for a team that had a highly paid quarterback, that had an iconic defensive player in J.J. Watt. Usually, you couldn't just cut J.J. Watt.
Right.
I mean, this is about as full of a reset as you can have in 1 year, isn't it?
Yeah, without a doubt. I know when I went from Seattle to New Orleans, we made an unbelievable amount of change and had a lot of transactions. And I think it was in the 20s. It wasn't in the 30s, but we kind of did a whirlwind resurface of the whole countertop, so to speak. And that's what they're doing there. I just think this rebuild comes at a time when I've said this a million times, but when there's a lot of good players on the street and it's a buyer's market. And so he was able to, I think, retool this instead of taking 2 or 3 years. He did it in 1 year. And now we'll see how this comes together. It's one thing to have a team on paper. Then it's going to get passed on to David Culley's desk here at some point, and we're going to see how we bring it all together and manage all these new guys. So I think, it not in a disrespectful way, but I don't think Nick Cesario cares about the past. I don't think he cares about their record last year. I don't think he cares about the subtractions of Hopkins or any of the other ones. I don't think he cares about them giving first-round picks for Jeremy Tunsil. You can't worry about it. You've got to be full-fledged forward and doing everything you can to rebuild this team. And like you said, change the culture. And I think he's well on his way to doing that. I don't think they're done yet, I'll be honest with you. I think Nick has done a really good job. I know everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon of what's going on in with the Texans, but I think he's done a good job to this point. And I really can't disagree with the moves he's making. Are they all going to work out? Of course not. They never do. But I think he's signed them with a reason and a plan and a criteria for which he brought them into. Everybody has a job description there. I know that for a fact. So I think it's going to be fascinating to watch how this team comes together. Like you say, it's one thing to have a team on paper. It's another to have it and actually manage it in the flesh. And that's going to be up to the coaches, how they bring these guys together. And the one downside is, and again, maybe we'll talk about this at some point, but we don't even know what kind of an offseason we're going to get yet. We don't know if we're going to have a virtual off season. We're going to get OTAs. What are we going to get? Are we going to get a preseason full of games? Are we going to get no preseason? There's a lot of things to be determined yet. And those all come together with the team building aspect first and foremost. And that's how I would look at it. But I kind of like where Texans are right now, I'll be honest with you. Other than, like I said, the Deshaun thing is a life of its own. But what Nick is doing to put the other pieces together, I think they're making progress.
Yeah, Randy, I've actually been listening to like sports law podcasts to like brush up on all that type of stuff, because we can't draw on anything from our past to say, oh, well, in this type of a situation, here's what happens. This is all new and so we'll see where that goes. But you're right. I think they just have to probably focus on their roster and football and what they can control. Caserio came to them from New England, and we talked about them a little bit before on a previous podcast, but they've been very active too. I mean, unusually so. And yet, Bill Belichick has a good record in free agency, so I guess, I mean, I give him the benefit of the doubt here. I mean, these look like pretty good signings.
I think he did a great job of forecasting the lay of the land. You know, we kind of poo-pooed the fact that he blamed a little bit of last season on cap issues. They didn't have any cap issues this year. They've known everybody was going to have a reduced cap. They've known that the pool was going to be deeper than ever before, and it's all come together for them. Their chance to sign primetime players, the competition was limited for these players. He hasn't had to pay crazy money. They have an abundance of cap room. I think media deals now coming in, we all realize that the cap is going to go up. That's going to take care of some of the lengthier deals that he signed, the cap numbers in future years. So I think it makes perfect sense what he's doing. Better than most, he's been able to hold himself accountable. I just go back to those two tight ends they drafted last year in the second and third rounds. All of a sudden, he just wiped them clean by signing Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, right? Who are those guys that he just drafted? No disrespect, but all of a sudden, developing players isn't so important. I think Bill's getting to the point where he wants to win right now as well. So we could go on and on about the reasons. I just think it's all coming together. And I like what Bill's done. I like the system. I like the fact that he's been decisive in pulling the trigger. And we even talked about it on an earlier podcast. I think the fact that he's the evaluator, the valuer, and also the guy that writes the job descriptions, it's easier for him to pull the trigger. He doesn't have to necessarily, and I'm sure he does build a consensus to a point, but he doesn't have to listen to everybody else. He can decide quickly on a lot of these things, and they don't deliberate for hours and days to make a decision. He can do that because he kind of wears all the hats.
Yeah, you know, looking at what they lost, right? Joe Thuney left as a guard for $16 million a year. Well, okay, so Hunter Henry and Kyle Van Noy, if you add up their average per year, it's 18.5. So I'd rather have Hunter Henry and Kyle Van Noy on the Patriots every day of the week. Nothing against Joe. I mean, good right. guard, but I don't think they're going to be sitting there in week eight going, God, they just really need a guard, you know?
Right. 100%. So. I totally agree. It's all about options. And he had X amount of cap room, and he's divided the pie up in the way that he sees best fit to kind of get away from what happened to them last year. They weren't a good team, and he knew he had to have volumes of players. Haven't they drafted? They have not drafted good. He's willing to admit that. And so I think the fact that he's been willing to cut the cord and say, you know, some of this is the price we pay for drafting poorly, I think it's a good thing for the Patriots, that's for sure. There's a lot of teams in this league who would not cut the cord on players they've invested in recently, especially draft picks, and you'd want to go out of your way to develop them. Not so much for Bill, not right now anyway. He saw enough to know that he needs to get better.
Who starts at quarterback week one?
I don't think that guy's on their team. I would say this. I think Cam is going to play better this year than he did last year just because the volume of talent that's been upgraded like we just talked about. But I think they're still in the market for a quarterback. That's just my opinion.
Yet there's not a long list of guys that are out there and available. I mean, sort of the ones you would trade for, the Wentzes or, you know, the Staffords, the guys who would be clear upgrades in terms of they're younger or they have played better lately, in Stafford's case, aren't going to materialize, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick's gone. And if you're looking for the mid-level guy who's maybe, you know, hopefully a little better than Cam, those guys don't seem to be there. So I guess I think it's easy to say that, but then when I try to think of who that will be, I mean, maybe there's an opportunity out there to get somebody, but who's way better than what they've got? They may just get more of what they got.
I think the linchpin to all of it, and this includes the draft as well, and this is just my opinion, Mike, is Sam Darnold. I think he's the linchpin, because if the Jets decide to go with Wilson at two, guess what? Sam Darnold's probably going somewhere, and I think that might be the 49ers. And when that happens, guess what? Jimmy G then goes to the Patriots. So there's kind of a domino effect here. And yeah, it's myopic to look at it that way, but I've said all along that the Jets are in the driver's seat for all of the talk we're talking about with quarterbacks. And they haven't, to my knowledge, picked a lane yet, whether they're going to stick with Sam or they're going to draft this kid. And once they do, then there'll be some other dominoes that affect it down the road. My opinion.
I know you've been high on Zach Wilson since the first time you looked at the tape during the regular season. You were talking about him, and you were before people were putting him. You said, "This guy, look out, he's going to be there." What would you do if you were the Jets? Would you? I love all of the options you have, but you have to pick one.
Yeah,
you only get to pick one. And not being an evaluator, I love the idea of, you know what, if we think Darnold's got some hope, I'd love to move back to eight or something, get some picks, still get a top five level talent in the draft and get additional picks and put Sam into a play action offense where a lot of guys look better than they do otherwise. That's where I'm leaning. What would you do?
Well, I've been on record as saying this. I'm a Sam Darnold lover. I think he's been in a tough spot ever since he was in college. I thought he was a tough spot at SC. He wasn't able to develop. Same with the Jets. I would keep maybe the one guy, but I think I do it backwards. Which one guy allows us to fill more holes by not being here? In other words, does the second pick allow us to gain four or five other starters in another way? Or are we better off using the second pick and then moving Sam for two or three other spots or two or three other ways? So you got to kind of put a piece. That is, if you see them equally. If they were coming out in the same draft right now, I would probably take Wilson.
Or Zach. Yeah.
Yeah, I would take Zach Wilson if they were in the same draft. So is there a big edge there? Well, there's enough edge to probably look at it. But you're also, you know, invested in Sam two or three years. You know, is the learning curve going to take you a step back with Wilson now?
Yes.
Zach Wilson.
Yeah, so.
You know, so there's factors on both sides. But, you know, I could make a case for both ways. I don't know. I think they know the most about Sam Darnold. That's the one thing that I keep coming back to. They know him better than any of us.
See, and I think that the unknown always gets you more. The unknown upside gets you way more in return than the known downside, right? People around the league are, there may be some who liked Darnold coming out, but Darnold's not going to have a huge amount of value. The second pick's going to have way more value.
And I think that's got to be a factor in making the decision. I really do.
Yeah.
Because, I think they've made some moves in free agency, but I don't think the Jets are saying we're happy with our team now. We don't need anything else.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So I think if I'm Robert Saleh, I'm looking over at Joe Douglas going, hey, you know, hey, what do you think, Joe? You were here with Sam, you know. Put your name on this, please, and I'll just go coach him, you know. So
what do they say? It's easier to play a GM on TV or the radio or social media than it is actually sitting in the chair.
None of these jobs have anything to do with what would you do if you took over a team.
No, that's right.
You don't get to do that. No. I was just laughing. I was looking at Atlanta's moves this offseason. They haven't done crap because he inherited a terrible cap. Right. A quarterback had to be done. That's not at all what he would do if he was taking over a team. But guess what? That's what you do when you take over a certain team.
The best laid plans of mice and men, they get shut out without, you know, nothing to do with him. They just haven't had, like you said, the opportunity or the cap room or whatever. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, so we said we would go through the AFC West, which is your old division, Randy. I mean, heck, Shoot, you were with Seattle when they were in the AFC West before they went to the NFC. You've been with
the Chargers. 27 years in the AFC West.
Okay, 27 years in the AFC West. I love it. And that's right, 27 years. You're right. So we're going to start there. What team do you want to start with? Where do you want to go with these teams in free agency? You
start with the world champs.
All right.
Yeah.
Let's start with the Chiefs. I'm not going to have to take a breath to move through their moves, okay? it's funny how the good teams do less in free agency because They're already pretty good. But they added the guard from New England for a lot of money. A little bit of a surprise to me. Yep. Blake Bell, a tight end, you know, on the discount, $1,000,001. I think they re-signed Mike Remmers, Taco Charlton, Sorensen, their safety. I don't know that they've lost anyone notable. Although I guess you just have to say they got rid of their tackles. I mean, that's lost. That's a choice they made to lose them. Feels like treading water to me at best. You know, it's not the whole off season, but what do you think of where they're at?
I think it's definitely treading water, and I could make a case for them even a slight bit below the water's level, to be honest with you. When you consider, I believe they were interested in Juju Smith-Schuster. That didn't happen, so they kind of whiffed there. They were also in the Trent Williams deal, right? The tackle from the 49ers. That didn't happen for them. They've been rumored to be in the corner market because they have a guy that's out there, Breland. He hasn't re-signed yet. So they've whiffed two or three times. The one when they haven't whiffed is they paid a guard $16 million. I just struggle with that in general. I mean, he's a guard, right? And there's nothing against Joe Thuney, but would you pay John Hanna? They say the best guard ever, $16 million? He's still a guard, right?
Yes. So
that's the struggle I have with what they're doing. You know, I would have liked to have seen him keep the $16 million. Maybe find 20 and sign Trent Williams. At least they got a tackle and maybe one of the best tackles in the league. But I would spend money on tackles. I think it's more a philosophy issue for me than anything else is They spent money on a guard. And I understand they're trying to upgrade and take care of their quarterback and all that. But I just don't know about spending money on a position that I think you should be able to fill in. If you can't find a guard that fits in, I just don't think you're doing your job.
Here's the thing, you know, free agency is all about what's available and not what you want. And I think that, like, I think their interest in Smith-Schuster, I think it was cursory on him. I think that he wanted to go back to Pittsburgh. He probably could have done at least as well in Baltimore. And so, yes, he was available, but they probably would have had to really go above. You know what I mean? They'd have to go above what Pittsburgh did. On Trent Williams, I think his heart was with Kyle Shanahan, right? And so he's in it with Kansas City. Shoot, San Francisco went to $23 million a year. Well, you're going to go to 25 and have 25 and a tackle who's 32 years old? I think they were going to be, that's a hard one to win and make it be responsible, although I'd probably rather have Trent Williams at 23 than Joe Thuney at 16. I'm with you. I feel like, here's where I'm at, though. Like, I don't feel like Buffalo necessarily seized the moment to overtake him either. I feel like they're sort of where they were, and it's been disappointing that they're not as good at tackle.
Yeah.
Something's got to happen there now, doesn't it? I mean,
yeah, they put it on the quarterback. That's who the difference maker is, and that's where they're at. I mean, I could make a case that I'd rather have the $16 million in Thuney and be using that on something else as well. So,
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree
just
with
think,
that.
Yeah, it's one of those deals where if you go to the track and you want to bet on a horse race, but there's no horses you're in love with, and you just bet anyway just because, That's kind of what I see is happening here. They went to the track. There was no horse that jumped out at them, but they said, we're here. Let's just bet on somebody. And so they bet on a guard. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's just my thinking. I don't think you have to bet. Okay. You don't have to bet. There's another race. So I think there's a lot of water that has to go under the bridge still.
It sounded like that may have happened to you before, Randy, at the track there. Like Coeur d'Alene, Coeur d'Alene Greyhound track out there. I just don't think it's there anymore, but used to be there. First time I went there, by the way, Randy, I was 20-some years old. I won $300. I thought, this is easy. That was like more than my weekly paycheck at the time. I thought, wow, I am set. And then you realize it's hard to win at the track, and it's hard to win in free agency. I mean, we're going to look back at a lot of these deals. I say this about Kansas City. The guard they got is going to be a good player for 3 years. He's going to probably start 40 out of 48 games over the next 3 years, and he's probably going to go to one Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
And that's going to be better than probably Bud Dupree and Kenny Golladay and all these guys that, you know, some of them you might hit on, but there's a safety factor at least on what they're getting. They paid for a horse that's going to show. It's not going to win. He's
going to
show.
They paid $48 million over those 3 years. $48 million. So think that through.
I know. I got you. So that's a good discussion. Let's move on. Let's move on in the AFC West. Let's do Denver. Yep. I think Denver's kind of interesting because they've got a new general manager, and George Payton came over from Minnesota. And it looks like he's made real fast friends with Vic Fangio, who really likes defense and coverage. And so they put their money in Ronald Darby for $10 million a year, Kyle Fuller, $9.5 million. Nice opportunistic signing, I think, for Fuller, who's been with Fangio and isn't going to cost you $15 million a year like some of these other corners. They've got a deal done with Justin Simmons, you know, good safety for them. Kept Shelby Harris, who's, you know, somewhat important to them. They let Philip Lindsay go. I think he wanted out of there, just sort of wasn't on the same page with the coaching staff for whatever reason. What do you think of where they're at?
I think they've done a really good job, I'll be honest with you. George is showing his roots. You know, George was a safety at UCLA, so we're going to spend money in that secondary and shore it up. And I'm sure there's no correlation there, but I think Justin Simmons has been a really good player since he came out of Boston College. I think way undervalued. I think he's one of the best safeties in the league. They were able to keep that crew and add to it. I'm always of the ilk that let's try to keep our good players and add to it. And that's why I like the philosophy that George has. He kept Von Miller. He kept the safety. These are good players. Now we're going to add to it. The offensive line, you know, that's still a little bit up in the air. They already were pretty good at running back and receiver. They've kept it. Nothing's really gone haywire there. And now they have a draft. I think they have the sixth pick in the draft or something like that. They're going to get a really good player there as well. But the one, you know, missing link for them, in my opinion, is still the quarterback. So if I'm them, I'm knocking the Jets down. I'm calling them every day. Joe Douglas is going to get sick of answering my calls, but I'm going to do everything I can to get to number two. And if it can take some convincing and maybe a player or two down the road, so be it. But I think that's the next move for them, is to find a quarterback. I don't know that I'm willing to sit on the Missouri kid for another year or two till he develops. I don't think Vic's getting up there in age. I think they got to put their chips in the middle of the table and try to find a quarterback. I know this, they were calling Seattle before Seattle was taking calls. So the Russell Wilson dilemma still hasn't happened yet. I think they're going to try to shake the tree as long and as hard as they can to hope a quarterback falls out sometime in the next couple months. But I'm with you. I like what they've done. I think they've kept good players and they've added to it.
Is your eval on Drew Locke, the quarterback, basically the same as it was coming out? Or have you seen what you've seen in the pros soured you or made you think worse of him?
I just think that there's so many ups and downs with the kid that it's been an inconsistent at best first couple years. And again, you can say that he hasn't had weapons, but he really has. He's had weapons. He's had a decent package to go with him. He's been given options by Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator. I just would have liked to seen the learning curve flatten out a little bit, you know, and the highs and lows are going to be what drive you out of this business. And he's got to find a way to be more consistent. And there's upside. He's got a big arm, but it just hasn't developed into a consistent NFL pocket passer, which I think lends itself to being giving you a chance year in and year out. I just haven't seen enough.
This is interesting about your AFC West history, because so when you came to Seattle, really not long before Denver, who was in that division, drafted Elway. Okay,
and
so
same over year. Same year.
So you got there the same year as Elway got there, and then you had to live in that division where, no matter what, I mean, Dave Craig went to 3 Pro Bowls, but I'm sorry, he's not. You know, there's no. You almost are never going to get that. And so here you are. You're George Payton, and you're going to Denver, and not only does Justin Herbert look good, like in for Chargers, that he could maybe be a real franchise guy. You've got Patrick Mahomes, who is the best quarterback in the league and looks like he's going to be for the next 10 years. How does that have to affect your outlook, right? Because we can't sign up for the tier 3 quarterback and the win with quarterback. We have to keep swinging for the big fence, right?
I agree 100%. You've also got Derek Carr in there. You've got the worst quarterback situation in the West. So you've got to find a way to go from tier 3 to tier 1. It's not easy. It may take another swing and a miss. And believe me, they've had plenty of swings and misses at quarterbacks in Denver. But George has got to find a way to make that position better. And it's really got to – you can't wait 2 or 3 years to do it. Here's this. I don't think they're going to be in the top 10 picking next year. So this is the 1 year if you can move up and you can pay – maybe you have to overpay a little bit to get to 2 from 6. I think that might be your best opportunity, because I think they'll win some games this year. They'll be picking outside the top 10. They'll never get a quarterback if that's the case. So they've got to mortgage some things, I think, draft-wise to get to number 2. And I think it's appealing to the Jets. You know, they don't want to fall clear out of the top 10 either. I think it's a race between Atlanta and Denver to see who gets up to 2. And if the Jets played their cards right, they might be able to go back twice.
I can just picture George Payton going, oh, finally get out of this division with freaking Aaron Rodgers. I mean, this is great. Hey, who do you got in your division over there in Denver? Oh, we just got the next Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes, and this Herbert kid's pretty good. And the worst quarterback's Carr, who's a Pro Bowler every 4th year, you know? So that is a tough situation. And I'm with you. I mean, they could be right in the middle, not be able to get a quarterback. So they're going to have to be looking all the time. Let's bounce to the Raiders, because – wow. We were going to talk about them last week, and then me, you, and Mickey Loomis got carried away. I think
we got sidetracked. Sorry, my bad. Yeah.
Great stories, but.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I don't think, let me just interrupt. I've never been as confounded by a team's transactions as I have theirs the last week or so. I'm trying to make sense of it. I'm trying to understand it. I'm trying not to just throw up my hands and say, you know, what the heck?
But, I know.
Yeah, I don't know that I can. It's just been quite I have trouble, and maybe it's my intelligence. I just can't connect the dots to their line of thinking.
I know, you know, and I've always been careful to just be overly critical, because I try to, you always figure someone has a plan. You may not know what it is, you know, and so you try to look at it and go, okay, because it may look different in August or whatever. But I'm going to run through their moves. Okay. So they added Yannick Ngakoue, who, you know, you've talked about a lot as a one-dimensional player. Kenyon Drake, they invested some guaranteed money in a running back. Solomon Thomas, not bad for 1 year, $5 million. I mean, he's a top 5 pick in the draft. John Brown, Quentin Jefferson, they were able to keep a few guys. Denzel Good, Nick Morrow, Hankins, Incognito came back. So they were able to bring back some guys. They lost Aguilar, the receiver, Tech McKinley, whatever. Tyrell Williams was a receiver, LaMarcus Joyner. Some guys they had added in free agency who didn't do a whole lot. But here's where the confounding part is. They traded 3/5 of their offensive line. Gabe Jackson traded to Seattle. Rodney Hudson traded to Arizona. Trent Brown traded to New England. Is that where you're also confounded?
Yeah, I just, you know, I grew up in an era where, of course, I worked for Chuck Knox and Mike McCormick, right? Mike McCormick's a Hall of Fame offensive lineman himself. And I was always taught for years that you never trade an offensive lineman, because guess what? You're going to need him sooner or later. And if you have a bunch of them, keep them, because you're going to need them sooner or later. So I've never worked under the premise that we can replace offensive linemen that quick. And anytime I've been places where there's been an offensive lineman traded, that team, it usually comes back to haunt them at some point. Now, maybe the Raiders are so skilled at coaching. Maybe Tom Cable is the best O-line coach in the history of the game. I don't know. But it's almost a little arrogant to trade these guys. And I don't know why they wanted to trade these guys. Maybe they needed the cap room for whatever. I don't know. But you're talking about really good players that they got rid of, a tackle, a guard, and a center. And if nothing else, it's eroded your depth to the point where, let's say you did have 8 or 9 offensive linemen that you loved, which nobody has, by the way. Nobody has 8 or 9 offensive linemen. Well, now you're down to 5 or 6. So you're going to need some guys at some point. You're never going to play a season with 5 offensive linemen. That's not realistic. So they've eroded their depth at minimum. So I don't know where they're going with this. I don't understand it. The exodus I heard, and you don't know what to believe, but Gabe Jackson had had enough. He wanted out of there. Rodney Hudson, the same way, he was beacon. He wanted out of there. When you mentioned Nelson Aguilar, he couldn't wait to bolt out of there to get to New England and play at a passing game where they might throw him the ball a third of the time he got it thrown to him with the Raiders. So there's just a lot of things going on there. A lot of guys trying to jump ship and have jumped ship. I guess I don't know the reasoning behind it all. So it just gives me pause to pump the brakes and say, whoa, what are we doing?
Yeah. And one thing that worries me a little bit is, you know, we've seen Tom Cable's history in Seattle as well, where sometimes those guys, you know, Alex Gibbs was another one of these guys who they'd almost rather work with the 5th round pick than have the guys with the pedigrees. And that sounds really great.
Yeah.
And it has worked sometimes. I mean, you put together a line, you're going to do this certain type of blocking. But there's a real downside to it, too. And just having those guys don't always work out. I mean, they're going to you asked me today to send you, hey, when did this guy, what was his name? Andre James. When did he play? We were trying to find we could look at the film.
Yeah.
And it was like 2019. I mean, there's some preseason and a start in the regular season. So they know him way better than we do.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's risky business. I'll say this. It's risky what they're doing. And I like Brandon Parker. He's going to be one of their tackles. And Andre James played pretty good in that one game. But you're talking, like you said, about changing 3 key positions up there and reducing your depth by 3. I just think there's going to be a period of adjustment there. And, it's risky.
Luckily, Derek Carr's always been known for wanting to stand in that pocket and never shy away from contact, going all the way back to Fresno State. So I think, that's what could go wrong, right?
Yeah. I just don't know how he's going to feel about it. I have my hunch, but
And I think he's going to let us know. He's, with some of his comments, all these quarterbacks do let out a little bit of what they're thinking. And I think Carr's been one of those too. If he starts getting criticism for how he's playing behind a line that's not protecting him, we're going to find out what Derek Carr thinks about it. And that's going to be an interesting situation.
A lot of pressure on the coaching staff there. I'll say this. I think the Raiders are confident in their coaches, and I think they think they can coach it up pretty good. Time will tell.
Yep, absolutely. Let's stay in the state of California and go to the Chargers, who lost Hunter Henry. We talked about him a little bit earlier. They're trying to build around this young quarterback, and so they got Aaron Rodgers center. They're paying Corey Linsley $12.5 million a year, pretty penny there. They picked up a tackle on a 3-year deal. They got Jared Cook. They got a couple tackles, actually, if you count Odey Abushi. I think they re-signed a corner, Davis. Mm-hmm. Lost Hunter Henry, Tyrod Taylor, Rayshon Jenkins, Dan Feeney, some other guys there. And they've got a new coaching staff, by the way, too. So I don't know. I don't love it.
Yeah. I would say this. For my money, it's been a typical Chargers offseason. They seem to always let a few guys go, sign a few guys to replace them, and therefore they never get ahead. I always think, gosh, I just wish we could do more. And I spent 10 years there. I just wish we could do more. I wish we could add more players. I wish we could keep Hunter Henry and then add Cook to it. Then all of a sudden we're like the Patriots, right? We've added to it. Same with the offensive lineman. They let the big kid that they they let him go that they traded for from Carolina last year, a guard, and now they sign another guy. They drafted poorly on Feeney and Forrest Lamp, and so they have to get Lindsey to replace some whiffs in the draft. So I'd like him to get more top-end players somehow, some way. It just seems like they never have enough to endure the injuries that aren't if, it's just when during the season it hit them. We all get that. So, I think it's been a ho-hum off-season so far for the Chargers. Again, you say build around the quarterback. I think, have you ever seen a team that doesn't want to build around the quarterback?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I feel like it's more defensible for Kansas City to tread water because they're already at the top. They're already in the highest mountain stream, right?
Right.
And they've got a ring on their finger, right? And they're paying the quarterback not on his rookie deal. So with the Chargers, I feel like you got to make up ground on that. Yeah. Where's our evidence that we are making a push? You know what? Wow, people said we should have taken Tua. Right. Well, screw you. We got the guy that everybody wants to have now, and here's what we're doing.
Right.
We've got a short window here where he's not going to be making $40 million a year. Right. So here's what we're doing. Here's our plan. And I'm with you. It feels like a mixed bag.
I like the players they've added. I just wish they'd kept the ones that they let go and then added this to the mix as well. So I just think if you're going to gain on the Chiefs, if you're going to gain on these good teams, you've got to find a way to keep your own good players and then add to it. That's just my opinion.
Yep. Maybe they're just feeling like, hey, we were poorly coached in game management last year, and we want to have better defensive coaching. And so that's going to make up for it. But to me, best case scenario, that gets you to 10-6. Guess
best
what?
Case.
Kansas City is going to be 12-4 if things go bad for them.
And if Denver finds a quarterback, guess what? They're going to be there at 10 or 11 wins too.
Yep, absolutely. And if the Raiders didn't give away their whole offensive line, they might be there too. So anyway.
It's time for Ask the GM.
The time's flown by. We got room for one more here. Let's head into our Ask the GM segment here. And if I can scroll to it and find it. We've got the league doing this big TV deal, right? Billions of dollars. And I guess the question is, what's next for the league, and is it imminent?
Well, I think we alluded to it a little bit earlier in the pod. I think the negotiating has started now between the league and the Players Association. How do we handle the off-season? I know the players want a virtual off-season altogether. The league obviously doesn't want that. They want status quo of the old time with the OTAs, the mini camps, all that stuff. And it really comes down to testing. Players don't want to test. I think the league would like all the players to get vaccinated so they don't have to test. The testing protocol alone is millions of dollars, right? That is a giant expense. So I think the league's case is, hey, let's get everybody vaccinated so we can do away with that. We don't have to do the testing. And then we're back to the preseason, the same argument we've had forever, right? Players don't want any preseason. The league, I think, wants 3 preseason games at least. So we'll probably end up settling in the middle at a couple preseason games, maybe 3 at the most. It's a 17-game schedule. So there's a lot of things up in the air that are being negotiated a little bit. I know Roger Goodell, several years back in an agreement he made with Dee Smith, it kind of got shoved down the player's throat. I don't think Roger wants to do that now. I think he definitely wants to work with the players if there's any way that he can. But at the same time, the good of the game has to win out at the end of it. And I do think preseason does help that. It helps teams manage their roster. It helps teams set their priority for their practice squads. There's value in preseason games beyond marketing, that's for sure. So it'll be interesting. I think that negotiations have just started on that front. We'll see if it plays out. I did like the one thing that I heard from the league this week in just looking to the future. They announced that the draft will be held in its old form in Cleveland this year, the end of April, first couple of days of May. So I was excited about that. I mean, there's some things there that I think the league and the players can monopolize some of that time, and it's such a big deal for the cities. That's a giant hit for Cleveland. If they're able to have a full pot of fans, so to speak, I think that's good for the league. So we'll see. But there's still a lot of things to be decided, and we'll see how that negotiation goes with the players over the next month or two.
It is kind of remarkable that, you know, I'm not saying the players love Roger Goodell, but he was really an outwardly hated guy by the players. You couldn't update your Twitter timeline without hearing some player calling him the devil, basically, you know. And like I said, it's not all happy, you know, warm and fuzzy, and some players are critical of the deal they did entered into him. But it does seem to be, we do seem to be a little bit closer to Roselle and Tagliabue with Gene Upshaw than we were in the past with Goodell and Dee Smith.
So I feel that too, and I agree. I think that's been real animosity in the past, you know, the last 6-8 years with him and Dee, and I don't see that quite the same now. I think there's a willingness to work with the players. So I think they have to with regard to the cap. We haven't even talked about the cap for 2022 and 23 yet. Who knows where that's going to go? So there's a lot of things that have to be worked out still.
Yeah, it's going to go up, but they're going to make a ton of money. The new broadcast deal's huge, and the players are going to get an agreed-upon share of that. That's going to be more than it would have been if they didn't get that much. So hopefully for the good of the game and everybody, the deal can work well for not just the owners, right?
Right. So no doubt. It's good for the game if everybody can benefit, and in the way that doesn't make anybody feel slighted.
Great. Hey, thanks, Randy. Thanks, everybody, for coming along. You can find Randy's work at MuellerFootball.com. Also, he's on Twitter at RandyMueller_. I'm Mike Sando. You can find me on The Athletic and also at SandoNFL. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.